Oh, yes. This is the Hardcore Marketing Show. I'm Casey Cheshire, your host for this epic journey. Today's show is sponsored by Ringmaster on a mission to launch B2B podcasts that create relationships, generate revenue, and drive growth. Ringmasterlive.com. Bam. And we're recording. I'm excited. This is going to be a good one. This is definitely one to grab the Red Bull, grab the coffee, because we are going to go over some amazing research data. We're going to go over some facts. We're going to end some debates. We're going to just get into it on this podcast. What are you talking about, Casey? You're being so cryptic. Well, let me tell you about the guest. He is a marketing leader and a researcher. He's an entrepreneur, a strategist, but also the kind who rolls up their sleeves to make it happen. Because if you put him in front of a marketing automation tool, he's going to know what he's doing. So he's got the marketing tech background, ways of social media, media ad buying as well. But man, the research is why we're talking today. We had a little conversation and I can't wait to unleash this on everyone. So without further ado, the owner of the Rule Marketing Group, inbound and digital experience manager at the Pedowitz Group, Caleb Rule, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here and I join the esteemed list of guests that have been on this podcast previously.
Yes, yes, there is a long list of myth smashers. And with that, it will be my job now to pass you something. So without further ado, let me hand you this. It's heavy, but I know you work out. Ugh, okay. Grab from me Thor's hammer. You got it?
Got it.
Backhanding. The number of guests that backhand grab Thor's hammer is always interesting to me. You are a strong individual, sir.
It's the pickleball wrist strength, which yes. We can talk about later.
Yes. Well, use that power now to smash for me some kind of marketing myth, bogus strategy, misconception. Set the record straight once and for all.
The ungate all of your marketing content movement is overrated.
Overrated.
Bam.
And are you just tired of hearing about it?
To a degree, yes, but that is not the reason that we are here today. And in fact, you referenced research earlier, and this is something that I have been looking into. I've been talking with marketers who feel one way or the other, because I've been on the record on LinkedIn as saying, I thought the ungate everything movement was overrated. But then I realized, what if I'm wrong? And I just asked that question. Wait, and I got
did really you put afraid. That out there? Did you tell the powers that be on LinkedIn that you thought it might be overrated? Because did you get feedback on that?
It was in response to someone from, I think it was Refine Labs, who posted, and they're all over the place. Clearly they're doing some content marketing strategy that works. So not hating on them at all, but I saw it and I said, I disagree with this. And so I kind of got into it. And so I decided to, I felt so strongly about it that I posted about it.
Wait, are we talking about our boy, Chris?
Not Chris Walker. Down the gauntlet? I would never go at Chris Walker because I'm pretty sure he could end me in 30 seconds with his content if he wanted to.
Well, he could just stare at you with his coffee infused eyes and then that would probably melt you.
When I was listening to his appearance on your show, I could just feel that intensity. It's just like, I could even feel it through the audio. So, I've never met the guy. He seems super cool. One of his employees, kind of posted. But then, I keep seeing people posting, hey, you should ungate all of your content. You had somebody, Angela Earl, on, a previous episode.
Shout out to Angela.
And she was passionately saying, hey, you should be ungating all your content. And so I thought, what if I'm wrong? What if I, after over a decade in the field, what if I've just gotten it simply wrong? And so I decided to talk to people. I started to really research it. I pulled together a blog that kind of presented both sides, and I really tried to present that. It's on the Pedowitz Group's website. And I didn't want to take a side in that article, excuse me. And I wanted to say, hey, here's the case for both sides. But here, we don't do this on this show. We have a take. And my take is, I really do think that the ungate all your content movement is overrated. I think it has been trumpeted as this end-all be-all thing on LinkedIn. And I don't think it's true for a lot of marketers who may be listening and reading these influencers and thinking, oh, I got to do this. You don't, actually. And in fact, I think there's a lot of things you could do instead that'll be much more impactful for you making your revenue number.
Interesting. So you went into this thing saying, okay, I think it's overrated. So you had this assumption. Were you able to eliminate your bias? You know, because I think people will want to know that, because I know you're about to tell us the things you've researched, but you went into this thinking this, and then you still think this even after all that research.
I do. So that's a great point. You know, when I was writing the article, I actually had folks who fully believe in the Ungate Everything movement. I had them review the article just to make sure, hey, am I presenting your point of view accurately? You know, because that was a fear of mine. You know, I took some journalism courses way back in the day in college. You know, I have written for newspapers. Citing your source is very important to me. And I wanted to make sure, hey, if I'm presenting both sides, I better really be presenting both sides and not be tinging it with my bias, because I did know going in, hey, I think this one thing, but I don't want this article to be confirmation bias. Right, you know, totally. That's not what I want it to be. What's ended up happening is that, you know, I do think it's overrated. Now, I did learn a lot of good reasons why you should be ungating content. I'm sure we'll get to that. So it is a little bit more nuanced. My take used to be that's stupid. You know, like that was my take originally. I learned a lot. And so I'm significantly more nuanced, you know, with it now. And I understand a lot more of where they're coming from. I just think that it's, you know, and that's why I didn't say, hey, it's a bad idea. I think it's significantly overrated, however, because it's not this end all be all that some people on social media would make it out to be, which you have to kind of do on LinkedIn to get the views, right?
Right. So that's key that you've said. Look, you chose your words carefully for that first sentence. Like I would expect you to, doing all this research and thinking, what is the word? You're not saying Ungate Everything is bullshit, right? You could have if you wanted to. You're not saying it's better than Oreos and milk, which almost nothing is. Instead, nothing. You're saying it's just a little overrated. So it's like one of those football players that, you know, or one of those professional any kind of athletic player that gets that extra salary and everyone's like, I don't know about that.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. You know, it's, excuse me, it has merit, certainly, yeah. In certain cases, you know, but I think as we go through kind of the reasons why I feel like it's overrated, you know, I think it'll be, okay, you know, this applies more, you know, and a lot of people who are saying this kind of fall in one bucket, I have found.
Right.
You know, and for instance, I don't fall in that bucket. You know, and so that's just as we think about the marketing landscape as a whole, which I know you do, considering the range of people that you speak with, and of course your own experience. it's just interesting to think about, okay, how this one piece of the customer experience really ties into a lot of the other pieces within the marketing landscape, especially when you think about all the different technologies and processes and goals that a marketer might be juggling on a daily basis.
Yeah, I can totally see it being interdependent on other parts of the strategy. And if you say your strategy is X, you should probably have your tech, you know, match that accordingly. I think too often we put the tech first and then try to have the strategy fit into that bucket. So it makes sense we're doing that. I think from my perspective too, the thing that drives me crazy is when the people saying any kind of strategy, you know, it's always like, beware of marketers telling you marketing strategy and does it fit into them selling you their product, right? You know, HubSpot's great at putting their stuff out there, but are they convincing you to get on HubSpot? Probably. They probably should. And then, you know, anyone that says ungate your content and then offers a chat tool perhaps or some other kind of way to get around using that, but it's kind of a form, but not really, you know, it's kind of a gate, but not really. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't like when corporate marketing sort of invades marketing strategy and then we're not really sure what we get. So real quick, I want to ask you, why has this happened in the first, where does the debate come from? And then after that, by all means, let's dive into, you know, where you've landed on all your research.
So I feel like, And you know, I've really thought about this over the last couple of weeks, probably more than I should.
Probably.
But I feel like, cue my wife popping in on this, kind of nodding her head emphatically, going, yes, right. He's been thinking about it too much. You know? I feel like with LinkedIn, you have a subset of people who fall into the influencers category. I think a lot of them are SaaS. They are software as a service providers. That's not to say all of them are, but I do feel like those are the types of people who keep popping up in my newsfeed and in other people's newsfeed, and they are kind of directing some of the conversation. I also feel like a lot of SaaS sales activity is happening on LinkedIn, because if you're B2B, you're certainly trying to drive to getting those conversations with B2B customers, and LinkedIn obviously is regarded as the best place to do that. You also have folks like Chris Walker, who, if you know, their ICP is a B2B SaaS company. I went to their websites, like, let me look, you know, why are they talking about this? Well, it's because their ICP is a SaaS company.
Yeah.
And so you know where their ICP is? LinkedIn,
right?
Some of those influencers. So look, it's probably working great for them. You know, because you know, you see all their content all the time. Well, so is their ICP. So great job. But in terms of, let's think a marketer like me, I'm marketing services. In fact, it's marketing service. Or let's say I work for Visa, or I work for IBM, or I work for a pharmaceutical company or an industrial manufacturing company. How my buyers operate is going to be significantly different than a SaaS company. And my calls to action are also going to be significantly different. And so therefore, the buying journey might be significantly different and a lot longer, more complex, with more touch points along the way.
Interesting. And you know, I think what we'll do is let's get to your research, the why and why nots, or what really you would distill out of this, and then probably talk more about the Chris's and the Angela's, and maybe bring in their episodes and whatnot as well. So where are you at? You've compiled, you've talked to so many smart people, and then it's like boiling an ocean or an ebook. We will definitely link to the file that people can get in the show notes. If you're curious to get more, definitely go get that, because we can only cover so much here. But like, what can you share with us today about your learnings on this topic?
So the five main reasons that I feel that ungating everything is overrated, it starts with this. And as somebody who, you wrote a book, Marketing Automation Unleashed, right? So marketing automation is near and dear to your heart.
Yes.
So I'm going to start with this. Forms are not evil. They are not evil. Bad forms are evil. If you fill out a form and the content is not worth the price that you paid, which is your information, that's evil. You can even say, spammy nurture cadences that you get that you didn't sign up for after downloading said content, that's evil. All of that is a very poor customer experience, but the form itself is not evil. In fact, I would argue that there's many ways to make a form a very, quite a frictionless experience, right? One thing that we do, some of our best performing content, it might be 4,000 words. You may not want to spend the time on our website reading a 4,000 word blog, which is ungated, by the way. But it's because it's a blog. I'm trying to get you to our site and learn about us on a topic of expertise. But I'll offer that to you in PDF format. All I need is your email. I don't need any other information to get you my content, but then boom, you're in my database. How much time did you really take to fill out that form? 5 seconds? 5 seconds? Right. Are we really crying foul about something that takes at maximum 30, well, should take at maximum 15 to 30 seconds to fill out? And if you're using an embedded form on your website, your browser is probably auto-filling that information anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Such a good point, right? I think we like to create waves in marketing sometimes just to get that message above the noise. And so you're right. It's like the baby out with the bathwater type metaphor where, okay, some forms have been done so poorly that it's like a crime against the world, against all business that this form is so bad. And that doesn't mean that all forms are bad, and just like I've gotten a spam email in my lifetime. That doesn't mean all email is bad. I've had a business send me spam email. I got a weird text message trying to ask me to sell my house and I hit stop and I'm like, maybe it's not even an autumn. I don't know what it is, but that was bad. That doesn't mean all text messages are bad. Right. So I think there's a sort of it's either juvenile or it's just trying to yellow journalism type of thing where you're just trying to create this sensation of like, oh, all forms are bad. You need some sort of, cause the champion for your marketing. And hey, good marketing for you, but just because it's good marketing for them doesn't mean it's, the strategy you need to adopt.
Yeah. And I think that's, that kind of leads into the second point, which I alluded to earlier, right? Which is that not everyone is a SaaS company. I'm just going to say it, right? So if I'm a SaaS company, I'm focused on metrics such as annual recurring revenue, such as how many booked demos I'm getting, how many people are signing up for the platform, and then is our customer retention really strong as well? Because the net new acquisition means nothing if they don't stick around and continue using the platform. So if my call to action is request a demo, okay, fine. Guess what? A downloaded white paper does squat nothing. It's not going to move the needle. Now you could argue that somebody in the database says that they're interesting, but it probably means a lot less to you if you need that request to demo. However, if we go back to some of those other industries, right? Fintech, pharmaceutical, services, you still need to convince the person that you're worth their time. Your buying cycle could be 7 months or longer. I've seen a deal in the last year that took 9 months to close. It was a high six-figure deal. Sure. Through attribution, I'm not going to tell you where they came from, because over 9 months, but I know there was a touch point way back then. It took them 9 months to finally come around, and the ability to be able to nurture some of that, kind of was helpful. We were able to send them and see what was going on through outbound activity. But we're also not a SaaS company, And I think a lot of the people that you see who are saying you should ungate all of your content are either targeting SaaS or they are a SaaS company. And if I had a jelly bean for every time that I heard somebody say, you should ungate all your content and then have them request a demo, my dentist would be coming after me and my kids, very, very quickly.
So they say get rid of gates, but then they say request a demo.
Yeah, it happens all the time. And so that's become the thing where I look for that. If somebody is saying, hey, you should ungate all your content, what's their CTA? And I just look for it. And so often they just default to, just request a demo. Not everybody has request a demo as your CTA.
But hold on. So they're saying don't have a call to action other than your demo. So they're saying give people all your content for free, because the only thing that really matters is them asking for a demo.
Correct. And in some regards, I can understand that, right? If you're trying to create demand for a product that they may not know exists, it is more valuable to you for them to actually consume your content and to actually have heard about you. So that way you can actually get into their initial consideration set when they have a problem trigger, and then they're actually looking at solutions to be able to solve their problem. However, there's a lot of times when you're thinking longer term, right? SaaS may not be able to think long term. But a lot of different companies can. Hey, what's my 5-year roadmap? SaaS, if you don't make your numbers this year, you may lose your funding, or there's going to be hell to pay potentially. So it has to be a little bit shorter term. Now, I don't say this saying that SaaS is getting anything wrong or that they could be doing better if they have gated content. Yeah. But what I am saying is that it seems like everybody who is propagating the you should be ungating all your content falls into one category, and that is SaaS.
Yeah. I wonder though, I would even challenge the folks on the, get rid of the gates in front of everything except for your demo request. That demo request is not early in the process. That's such a late stage request that, and I know our friends at some of the Sixth Sense and places like that are willing to do these things because they have their tracking elsewhere. But the idea of allowing someone to go on their way without getting them, and because the only thing you're offering, it kind of reminds me of the old days where the only thing people would offer was like a contact us, and it's like, people don't want to contact you. They just want to get your stuff and then go away. And if they do that, then maybe they don't come back. So why not get a little love? And Chris Walker's approach of like having a little news people can read when you're very early in and you're going to get them one way or the other, maybe some Facebook retargeting cookies. Okay. I get that, but man, you got to capture something. You got to allow them to give you the email address before it's a demo request. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you fundamentally.
You can disagree. I mean, you have the hammer now, so it's okay.
I will say, so kind of, I have divergent thoughts on this.
Cool.
I agree with kind of what Chris says with the news making, right? You need to be generating the headlines. You need to be, it's top of mind awareness, what it is, right? We've heard terms like wallet share, mind share. That's real, right? I mean, it's voice, it's really market share. You know, are you in somebody's brain when they need a solution to the problem that you can solve? If yes, you have a strong brand. If no, guess what? You're probably not going to win the deal.
Right.
I do think it's also funny that you mentioned Sixth Sense, right? So I have Sixth Sense. I also have Drift, which you alluded to earlier, you know, with the lead bots. I'm just going to go off on a slight tangent here. In my research, please. I, you know, Drift wrote an article that said a year without forms. In that article, they talked about how they replaced their forms with lead bots, which is a form in a different way. And I would know that because I'm our system admin for both Drift and Sixth Sense.
Right.
So I did that when we switched from some Marketo forms in our site. It took me a little while to went, wait a minute, I haven't improved the customer experience at all. I have not removed, in fact, you could even say that I made it worse, you know, because now you have to wait on the bot to trigger the next question. I didn't actually remove any friction from the forms that we were doing.
Might have delayed it, actually. You're right.
Yeah. So I actually, you know, a mistake that I made was hang on, you know, am I really able to reduce the friction by adopting this technology? The answer was yes. I just didn't do it right initially. Now, you know, we've significantly reduced the amount of questions that we ask. The implementation, however, I don't have to use embedded Marketo code on the site. So there's some technical SEO ramifications for that, plus resource constraints. You know, I'm able to do that in-house, right? I don't need somebody from our Marketo team, you know, or I don't need to have somebody else do that. I can just go, bam, I need this now. I can do it now. So when it comes back to the question that you said, which was, hang on, you know, request a demo is very late in the process. That kind of gets to something that I find interesting, which is as we have the revolution of cookieless everything, it's not really a revolution now, I guess, since everybody knows about it. But tracking is less reliable. It's not unreliable, but it is less reliable. What is your cost of acquisition going to be as you continue to remarket and continue to remarket and continue to remarket? Yeah. Because you keep getting people to your website, but you don't know who they are.
Right.
You have a user, and this gets, and now you take that and think about it from a Sixth Sense or an intent data platform angle, whether you use demand-based or whether you use Terminus or another platform out there. When sales gets an alert that says, hey, this account is interesting, what's the first question they're going to ask marketing?
Is there a lead with a phone number?
Exactly. Who do I talk to?
Who do I talk to? Yeah.
Who do I talk to? Do you have a lead that I can talk to? Now, I can hear someone, some folks that I talked to, you know, for the article saying, wait a minute, you don't have to have those leads because you could say, this is a target account. They're showing interest. Let's pull people into our database. And then you should really have some good outreach so that way they know who to talk to. Hey, based on what's in your database,
cold
you
may not calls, have the man. Exact. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah, which is interesting, right? Because the founder, you know, or not founder, the CMO, Latney, of Sixth Sense has a book, No Forms, No Cold Calls, No Spam. But it's very specific how you can get to using that platform to be able to enable no forms, no cold calls, no spam.
And I got to read that because confident. Before I call bullshit on that, I got to read it because I know Latney's a great person, but that title confuses me.
Yeah, she's awesome. I have enjoyed some of her talks, so I'm not throwing any shade at her. In fact, her book is.
I know, but it confuses me. That title confuses. I remember seeing a long time ago saying, oh, this is great. Those are all words you'd like to see. But now that hearing you say it, it's like that doesn't sound possible.
It is possible, but it's very niche. And I'll just be honest. The steps that it takes to get there, I'm not confident that a lot of marketers are going to be able to do that. And that gets to another point where I say ungating everything is overrated. Let's think about how marketers are regarded in a global organization. Think of Fortune 1000 company.
Sure.
You still have companies today where marketing is either seen as the pens and mugs department, the make it pretty department.
Right.
Yeah. It's, you know, fortunately that it seems to be shifting, but it's not eradicated. you still have marketers that are trying to get sales to work with them to figure out what's a valid lead.
Mm-hmm.
You still have marketers who continue to have the onus of educating up throughout their company that, hey, what I do impacts revenue. Here, let me prove it to you. And they are still met with barriers. This happens. Yeah, this happens all the time. Still today. Do you really think that marketer is going to be able to keep their budget if they're trying to say, hey, my leads dropped by 50% in the last quarter? They're not operating in an environment that's going to allow them to thrive with an ungate everything content strategy. And that budget's going to magically disappear. Or that's they a good point. Will.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, because I remember having conversations like this around lead scoring and grading. Like if you're going to hold a lead up a little bit longer so it can get a higher score, it means you get less of them, but they just have higher scores. But there's a conversation, a mature conversation where saying we're going to send less of these, but they're going to be better. And that actually makes your job more efficient, but don't throw me under the bus saying I didn't send you enough leads, right? Like, so that you're right. It's a very tricky conversation to have, easier said than done. Moving to something like that, you can't just knee jerk reaction, remove all your forms and wish for puppies and unicorns, because then your number dries up. And if you're not able to track contribution and sources or something, some way to show that you're doing something, then that's a quick way to get out.
So I'm going to ask you a question kind of tangential to that. Are you in the attribution is overrated camp, or are you in the, you know, how do you feel about attribution as we sit here?
That's another tangent that let me write that down. Cause if you get me talking about attribution, maybe attribution is your next thing. But then you're really going to have people holding torches to your house afterward. Okay. Yes. Pause on attribution. Let's go back fair, to your list. I think we've done two, I think, so far. You got me on jelly beans.
So we've talked about forms are not evil.
Right.
That was the first one.
Yeah.
We've talked about how not everyone is a SaaS company.
Right.
So that was a big one. We've actually touched on one, which is marketing reality, where it comes to budget conversations, respect throughout the organization. You know, I think there's a whole conversation we could have around company culture, especially where is marketing seen as a revenue driver?
Right.
If the answer is no, you got bigger problems. Right. Don't go upsetting your content strategy because you have significant other problems that need to be fixed before you can consider changing your content strategy.
Yeah.
We talked about as well, kind of, but I'm going to officially, you know, make this point for, which is please don't blame the gate itself for bad lead scoring. You've already touched on that with lead management and how, hey, we're sending you the wrong leads. Okay, that's a lead scoring problem. That's not the gate exists and the gate is evil problem. That is a different process altogether. And this is still rampant.
Blame the gate for the low numbers?
Yeah, or blame the gate for, hey, sales is ignoring all of marketing's leads because they're not sales ready leads yet. So the lead scoring algorithm is sending the wrong lead at the wrong time to sales.
You're right. I could see a lot of people pointing at a form saying, it's the fault, you know, of the form, but you're right. There's like multiple other things going on here. If they're not sales ready, they still filled out a form. So it doesn't mean they're sales ready or not. It means you're talking to the wrong people, or maybe you can build some automations elsewhere. Yeah. It's a different topic. You're right. But it's like, oh, it's the form's fault.
I feel like it's one of the most common refrains that I see people say, really? which is, somebody who downloads an ebook or a white paper is not sales ready. They're right. They're not sales ready. But if sales is getting that lead, that's not the gate's problem. You know?
How are they right though? Just because maybe they are. I mean, I'm not ready to say they're not. Are you saying definitively if you download an ebook, you're not ready? I mean, you might be.
I suppose it does depend on what the content is. Okay. So that's a good point by you to be a little more nuanced in the phrasing here.
Right.
So,
are you saying they didn't request a demo? So because they didn't request contact, they're not ready for contact?
In some ways, yes. Now, here's where your lead scoring algorithm should come in play, right? If that person has been seen before, and they've downloaded three other pieces of content, maybe they are. That actually leads into as well point five, and I'm going to come and marry this back to point four a little bit, which is that first party data is still king. I referenced cookieless earlier. You know, as third-party data is less reliable, it's reliable, but it's not as reliable. what's the best piece of data you could possibly have? A lead, information that was voluntarily given by somebody into your database.
100%.
And, you know, and I've heard people say, well, people input fake stuff all the time. Do they? Some people will. That's not going to be valid lead. Fine. You're not going to be have sales, you know, chasing them down. Your lead scoring algorithm should DQ them or tamp them down or something if you can't figure out who they are. So again, lead scoring, not a gate. But I, as a marketer,
real quick, could you explain the parties though? Just go through the part first. What's first party? What's third party?
Sure. So no, that's a great point. So first party data is data that you own. So let's say, for instance, somebody comes to your website, you can track what that person does. That is first party data. You are managing the sources of that data. So think it. So it's more like, you know, hey, they came to your website. They are filling out a form, getting into your database outbound as well. If they click on an email and they're, you know, you can really see that. So your marketing automation platform is an excellent source of first party data. Third party data is outside of your purview. It's not necessarily what you can control. Some examples could be, hey, LinkedIn is looking at, you know, at these people who fall into this interest, you know, group, or an advertising platform is saying, hey, an affinity audience is based on this. Well, that's their data. That's a third party's data. You could have data enrichment. You know, that you're pulling from a third party data source to pull that into your database and make it part of your first party data, but it's third party data. You don't own it. You're just using it. So that's just a couple of examples, but no, that's a great point as that defining that I think can sometimes get a little interesting.
When in doubt, if you own it, I mean, nothing comes close to that. Not you buying it from some source, reputable or not, not you acquiring it. And it's like, no, it's yours. You know, someone voluntarily gave it to you. That's great.
And they raised their hand. They said, hey, your content, what you have is interesting enough to me that I am willing to pay a price giving you my information, knowing, especially in my field, because I'm marketing to marketers. So, hey, I already have a higher, you know, bar to clear. I'm marketing to B2B marketers primarily. Like you know, people I'm marketing to are cynical like me. I don't feel your stuff necessarily. It better be worth it. And, you know, but that's the thing, right? If I find your content valuable enough to actually fill out the form, you've done something right.
Yeah.
And also they were willing to tell you, hey, I'm finding that you're worth my time. Doesn't necessarily mean that sales should talk to them just yet, but marketing now has somebody that says that you say, ah, person X within this company is very interested in what we're doing. Also, your intent data is now going to have a name record that's on it. That's on some of that information. It's going to be a much more complete picture when you look at the account level, even if you're trying to do account-based marketing, when you look at it in your CRM.
Mm.
So I'm a huge, you know, huge fan of first-party data. My colleague John Searle wrote a blog on different ways to really look at that as well. And it's, you know, and, you know, there is a tangent to that, which is email, still undefeated.
Yep.
But, you know, kind of back to your earlier point, right? You know, I've gotten bad emails. Doesn't mean all email is bad. I get bad cold outreaches all the time. So do you, I'm sure. So do who, you know, whoever's listening to this right now is probably nodding their head going, me three.
Yeah.
Everybody gets terrible sales.
Bad outreach. Email, bad event I've been to, you know, bad podcast, never on this show, of course, but, you know, other places. But yeah, like you, just because you see a bad version of something doesn't mean throw any of that thing out. Beware. I've seen this before. I'm not sure who's quoted it lately on LinkedIn, but beware of anyone telling you to stop doing something altogether, you know, unless it's spam, but even that has its place sometimes.
I mean, spam can be tasty in the right, you know, you fry it up a little bit.
You know, it's like one of those things, like everyone literally spams. Maybe there's like 10%. Tell me if I'm wrong, right? But we have all these, you know, Marketo has a thing, Pardot has a thing. Like, you know, make sure it's your own data. Everyone's like, yeah, check the box. They upload their files and they're like, let me spam people.
Yeah, that's true. I think everybody has done it at least once.
It doesn't work that well. It's a very low conversion rate, but
spray and pray is still a thing, which is interesting.
Yeah.
That the fact that it is marketing tech has become so sophisticated, and yet we still revert to outdated, old school tactics that have not been proven to work. And people who say that they do are operating from, I would argue, an outdated data set. But sometimes you have folks like that who are in C-level positions because, you know, hey, when I was doing that 20 years ago, not saying C-level can't adapt, obviously.
Yeah.
There are brilliant C-level marketers who say things that I'm like, whoa, I'm never going to be as smart as you, you know? You do have that happen where you have somebody with a legacy mindset, then they work their way up, you know, because they've earned it, they've driven results and whatnot. But then, hey, customer expectations have changed. 2020, unfortunately, really highlighted some of that with the customer expectations. How you go to market has to adapt. And it's not just gates versus ungates. It's a lot more than that. Some of your data content maybe doesn't need to be gated, but some of it should be, but in a more frictionless way.
Yeah. Tell me about that. So if you were to give someone a direction to follow then around what to gate, what to not gate, when, where, and why, you know, from a 30,000 foot level, generally speaking, what's the best that you recommend?
So the first thing that I would do is you need to know what your content is. I think there's a lot of marketers out there, and I was one of them until somewhat recently, where it was like, okay, what's actually on our website? What are we actually offering to our prospects? And it's not just on our website. Content is anything a prospect or a customer can consume. Could be a video on YouTube. Could be an infographic that's floating on SlideShare. Could be, et cetera, et cetera. What do we really have? And then what are we offering? And then what is working and what isn't? Now, this has bigger implications than just, hey, you know, how do you measure what's working? Is it driving, you know, is it influencing deals? Is it influencing leads that become deals, in your database? Because, a lot of marketers, I would argue, through attribution struggles, bad data, or just not having those two tied together, maybe you can't tell me, hey, what content actually drives deals? If you can't answer that question, ooh, that's a gap, right?
Right.
But then you need to look at it from an SEO perspective. Hey, when people look at this content, do they stick around? Do they leave? Maybe that content's not working for you. So you look at all of your ungated content in that way, right? And maybe you should combine some of it. Maybe you should just delete some of it. Get rid of the bad content on your site. Google will thank you. You'll see it in your rankings. We did. We have 5X the amount of rankings and 2X the amount of traffic, 2.5X the amount of traffic over 2 years because we deleted half of our website because a lot of our content was old and it just wasn't working for us. Gotcha. But then, okay, when do you gate something? So there's a couple of guidelines that I would use with this. Number one, they can't get it anywhere else. And they can't get it anywhere else for free. Hello, Gartner, Deloitte, Forrester. Why do they have all these reports? Well, because I know if I go to their site, I'm going to get something I can't get anywhere else. Yeah. That form is going to be worth my time to fill out.
Yeah.
Because
they know it because their forms are terrible. Their forms have like 18 fields on them.
You're so right.
Yeah.
I hate some of those forms. I've actually not downloaded things because even though it's like, I really want to read this, but there's eight fields. As a marketer in principle, I refuse. Now I'm probably not their ICP anyway. So they're like, whatever, dude. But if I feel that way, I'm sure other people do too.
Yeah.
So that's one. Number two, ask yourself this question. Is your content actually worth the price of their information? Because you're invading their privacy. You're asking them to willingly say, hey, I exist, target me. put a price on that. Could you? I'm not sure I could quantify it, but if time is money, you think of those sales outreaches. Hey, can I have 15 minutes of your time? Well, let me think, for instance, on my side hustle, which is an on again, off again thing, I charge $75 an hour. Okay, well, if you want 15 minutes of my time, then, is it really worth, not quite $20? I don't think so, because I don't know who you are yet. Now, these are bad cold sales outreaches. But when you start putting a figure to that number, and then you think about it in this context, hey, what's the price of me giving your email address? What do you think a marketer, what would you put on it, Casey? What kind of a number, how much is your email address and your intent worth to a company, or to you to give it to a company? $25, $100, $300?
Yeah, I think you, it's a great question. It ties back into the email address isn't really worth anything, but it's how much time is it going to take for me to unsubscribe? How much time is it going to, are you going to add to my inbox, which is already a pain in my ass for sure. So it's like, if you're going to harass my inbox and I'm gonna have to go through a dance to unsubscribe, that might take me 5 minutes, which makes me a little bit less risk adverse sometimes. And I'll just throw it out there and see what happens. And I can unsubscribe if I need to, but yeah. And I think as a marketer, we might be a little bit more carefree with it because we kind of know the game and we know that unsubscribes are unsubscribes.
True.
But I think a lot of other people might be a little bit more protective of that. And you're right. It has to be something you really want to get. You really want.
And so this is one reason why, we have moved actually away from white papers and PDF, you know, by themselves necessarily, or eBooks. We still have a couple because people keep downloading them. Okay. You know, until people stop downloading them, we will keep that as a gated standalone piece. And that's a side note. Ask yourself, hey, if I have a piece of content that's gated, are people actually downloading it? Because if not, you either need to repurpose it or ungate it.
Okay, that's fair. Okay, that's a fair approach. I won't profess to be like hardcore all the direction of form everything everywhere. But
of course,
given an opportunity, I will just say, if you don't know any better, just gate everything. And I like what you're saying, where it's like, okay, but take it off of certain places. And I will say sometimes there are just really shitty eBooks, in which case these people deserve to be shadow banned and whatever else we can throw at them. But I would say, like, if you wrote an eBook, knowing how much time and attention you put into this topic, I would totally put my email down. So I think there's an element of showing people one piece of content is worth it.
Value.
You earn their trust. I actually need them to fill out that, fill out one form. The rest of them I'll get you later on. But I think certain kinds of content done right, like your stuff, Gartner stuff, things where you know time and attention has been put into it, then I think it's much more likely to get a trade.
And that's why we've actually moved to bundles, because a PDF by itself is one thing, but we actually have taken a lot of those and bundled them together with fresh content, or just repurpose some old content that played well once, but is still relevant, even if people aren't downloading it.
Content bundles. You heard it here.
You could get 4 or 5 or 7 strategic documents for the price of one form fill out. That might be more interesting.
That's interesting.
I'll give you an example. Great resignation. Everyone's, one of our favorite buzzwords, now. We have a talent bundle. And I'm not going to, try to sell you to go download it here, but like, why did we bundle it? Well, because, if there's an org chart lookbook in there, that by itself could be interesting.
But why don't you tell people, where is it at?
So it's on pedowitzgroup.com. Okay. And it is, there's a trending topics page. You can actually see it front and center right there. There are multiple bundles. There's a revenue marketing kit. There's a marketing operations kit as well, that has multiple documents in one. So if you go to trending, at the very top of the site, you just click trending topics, and then you can jump to your options and pick one that's interesting to you.
I see. Yeah.
But you get multiple documents that speak to one problem, one strategic problem or challenge, or just topic of interest all at one time. So all of a sudden I look at this and I go, oh, for the price of my email, I get 4 documents. Now, a cynic might say, you made 4 documents that I'm not going to read. But you know what? If you downloaded it and you don't read it, there's either one of two problems. Number one, you weren't going to read it in the first place, so why'd you download it? We're all guilty of that. I have totally done that. I downloaded something, best intentions. I got sidetracked by a burning fire and I completely forgot about the PDF.
One of Chris Walker's key points. It's like, nobody actually reads it. But I'm like, oh, it's okay, Chris. At least we got their email. We'll get them on the next one.
And here's the thing. You can send them a reminder email. Thing that I wish companies did was, if I download your content, ask me how I enjoyed the content.
Yeah.
Because if I didn't read it, I totally forgot about that. I think there's a real golden opportunity there to be able to just say, hey, you downloaded some content. What'd you think? Was it good? Did you not read it? We've all been there. There's a really easy way to humanize kind of how we do things. But with the bundle as well, I'm looking at this going, okay, there may only be one document that really intrigues me, but then, the second one, I actually didn't know. There's a chance for discovery. you know, as I'm going through some of that content. And then all of a sudden I'm feeding into binging. Hey, I could, you know, if I'm really hyper interested, I might binge this for 30 minutes if it's super in depth, or maybe for 2 minutes, but I'm going bam, 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 one document, two document, three documents. Hey, this is all interesting. My logo's on everything. And now you're getting a strategic plan and you feel like you're getting the value for the download that you received. And we all love bundles anyway.
Yeah, no, I love that. And people should check out the Pedowitz group. We'll link to it down below, the trending topics section. It's a great masterclass on, you've got articles under deep dives that you can read without, you know, getting any kind of information. But of course, that links probably to all the things where you can. You get the bundles and guides. I think that's a big takeaway for me today. I'd never thought about the bundle. And it's like, just in case one piece of content, mate, let's be honest with ourselves. Maybe your ebook alone is not as cool as you think it is. But the idea of seeing a talent bundle, revenue marketing bundle, marketing operations kit, all of that stuff bundled together, I think I'd give that a whirl. And there's my email address. And, you know, now don't trick me, actually give me some value. But if that's the case, man, I really like this stuff. So I definitely want people to check that out. But what I want to do now is, because I know we could probably talk about this all day, but I really want to switch and ask you this next question, which is, who are you? How do you know all these things? Can you take me back in time to like little Caleb days? Did you always know you're going to eventually be essentially like the Gandalf of marketing and know all these things and know the power of the One Ring? Take me back in time, little Caleb. What was it like growing up you?
The extended trilogy, always worth a New Year's binge, by the way, 100%. For LOTR. If anyone disagrees, fight me. So who am I? I mean, as a little kid, actually, people thought I was going to be a lawyer. I was somewhat argumentative, potentially. I am a type A. I was a type A then. But I was,
which is amazing because you're super gracious about the forms. You've been very nice about it to everyone involved.
You know, having children really humbles a man. I have a 4 and a 2-year-old, and between them and two cats, I'm pretty much just told I'm wrong a lot these days.
Yep. I hear so,
that does mellow me out a little bit. But you know, I was growing up, and no, I didn't know marketing at all. I know that I love strategy. When I was 4, I learned how to play chess.
Cool.
And you actually, if you go to my LinkedIn or even marketing group or stuff like that, you know, there's a chess motif. I do play still. I beat my dad when I was 5, which may say more about him than me. Because now I think about it, I was like, was he good or was it I just bad? No. Anything that kind of relates to, you know, hey, this move will then lead to these other 14 potential moves, whether it's playing a game, you know, or whether it's marketing, right? Yep. It's all chess. You move one piece and then, oh, infinite possibilities, you know, kind of can come from that. And because we're dealing with humans, a computer can't solve it. A computer can't solve everything. Hello, AI, you know,
right.
Has not solved all of marketing's challenges because right. We're dealing with humans. We have psychology involved. So that was a huge influence on kind of how I got into marketing. I thought I was going to be a math major. In high school, I did joint enrollment at the local community college. We thankfully had that option. And then I took calculus 2 as a senior in high school and wondered what in life could use this that I would enjoy. And the answer was nothing. God.
You took calculus. I took calculus in high school too. I did not fare well in that. I did not give it my focus.
I will never forget. That was, I walked out of the perfect. So I wasn't like the day I had the final, it was actually double booked because of a scheduling malfunction. So I had to go to the professor's office and take it on my own. So I'm like in this like little corner at a table taking this final. And I know I've struggled with this class. And I walked out of there like, I'm pretty sure I just failed my first class ever. I think he gave me a B out of pity. I'll never know. But shout out to all the professors who are kind and gracious to people who, you know, work hard.
Seriously, I wish I had that professor. I did not get the B, that's for sure.
I was very thankful for, I've never been so thankful for a B in my life.
Seriously.
So I went to college. I went in as undeclared because I thought I was going to be a math major. I was like, I don't have any clue what I wanted to do. And ended up becoming a mass communication major. Truth be told, because I really wanted to find a career path that would maybe one day get me on ESPN's Around the Horn, which is a show where, for those who don't know, you have 4 sports writers. Although
yeah.
Oh, the only sports writers. Yeah. And they just talk about some of the hot sports topics of the day. Sports has always been something that I find interesting. I'm more of a generalist. I follow the headlines, but I loved that show. I still do.
Yeah.
And so I listen to the podcast now, even sometimes. So, you know, what can get me on that show? Let's roll with Mass Comm. Let's try an intro class. Met some friends and loved it. We spent many long hours in the lab together, you know, editing video and doing all sorts of crazy things. Obviously, that's not what I'm going to be, but that's kind of that Mass Comm got me into a love of stories, you know, and from there, thankfully, the career, you know, kind of happened where I landed at what's now Augusta University. Did some jobs that were kind of marketing related, some website stuff, some PR stuff, you know, some social media management. And then I ended up at a marketing agency, and that's really where it took off, where I discovered Google Ads, SEO, Google Analytics, and I really dug in and went, I really enjoy this.
Yeah. Yeah. It kind of blends, it blends the creative side and the analytical side, you know?
I love using both parts of the brain. You know, I love being able to talk about, hey, let's talk about, you know, Drift integrating to Sixth Sense, integrating to whatever. We could talk technical, but then 5 minutes later, I, you know, talking about, hey, let's talk about this ad creative or how this looks or how this feels or something like that. And really thinking more creatively, you know, so you could talk to a marketing technologist, but then you could talk about somebody who's more into the ad creative. I love that, being able to ping back and forth, because it's interesting. It's just interesting seeing how both sides work. And so I do enjoy, you know, you said it was the Gandalf because, you know, just the experiences, every marketer, I think, unless you're just a diehard specialist, and you love one thing. I don't, I love how it all works together, but I don't necessarily love doing this one thing all day, every day. I love how it all works together strategically. And so that's, you know, kind of how I got there, is being able to left side, right side of the brain, technical and creative. I may just flip those, but
No, either side, whichever one is which. I totally get what you're talking about. And that just makes it fun and makes it worthwhile. So currently now you're at Pedowitz. You're also doing some of your own consulting as well. Tell us more about, you know, who's a great client for Pedowitz and as well for your own consulting.
So my own consulting is on again and off again. I have done, over 10K, you know, business with that. So I have worked, you know, in a sales capacity and stuff like that, you know, to be able to sell it, but then I obviously have to fulfill it. My wife, who has creative, you know, and has worked in agencies before. Now she's a stay-at-home mom, which I'm very thankful for, but she has worked with me on some of those projects. So right now it's an off again kind of project, but as we needed.
You said she's creative. Does she do like graphic design and stuff?
She has. Yeah, absolutely. And so it's kind of nice because she's strong in that. I can give feedback, but I know that she's the expert. So we work really well together.
Wow.
Coming up on 9 years of marriage. So I don't, you know, so I've learned to listen pretty totally. Well, I suppose, but, you know, so that has been pretty fun, right? So for instance, had a friend who does a luxury home building in Augusta, Georgia, and his site just desperately needed a facelift. It's in Squarespace, popped in, you know, just simple site, made the content solid, did some local SEO work, and boom. So within 6 months, he said, dude, I'm booked out for a year.
Wow.
And, you know, very thankful for that opportunity to be able to do that, just because it's like, hey, you've got the opportunity. It's not going to take that much to get into a good place. So that was really cool for me to stretch some of my knowledge in a different way with a small business.
Right.
With the Pedowitz group. So I'm on the internal marketing team. So I'm marketing the company to clients and, you know, and you have enterprise, you know, enterprises, global complex enterprises. So we may work with one business unit. We may work with all of them. You know, there is a Fortune 100 credit card company, you know, that we work with. I can't say the name, but we have some other ones who are like, Zimmer.
Does it rhyme with Lisa or does it rhyme with, to American, yes, press?
I'm just going to say yes.
Yes to all.
It might, it, you know, so, but it, you know, we have some case studies on the site, certainly, you know, we've worked with GE, in the past where we led a transformative effort across multiple, clients. And, you know, what we do is one of the reasons why I ended up at the Pedowitz group. And this is just kind of a personal tangent, is I like being the dumbest guy in the room.
Yeah.
Because that means I'm going to sit, you know, so like currently I'm sitting here in a virtual room with you. I'm the dumbest guy in the room right now.
Nah.
I, you know, you're interviewing me somewhat. We're talking about something that I did, but I know that you have so much knowledge, which is cool. So I love this. When I walk into a room at the Pedo Group, I usually almost always feel like I'm the dumbest guy in the room. Not because I'm dumb. You know, I think I do good work, you know, and there's revenue impact, but they're so freaking smart.
Yeah. That's
and cool. That's why I came to the company. You know, they're doing all this stuff for clients, whether it's lead management overhaul, whether it's overarching strategy, you know, and hey, you got to overhaul global processes, that sort of stuff. I'm sitting here in awe, just going, man, this is cool. You know, just watching them work, and you just feed off of that energy where it's like, I can tell A, you love what you do. B, you're really good at it. And C, I learned three new things in the last 5 minutes of this call. Like, whoa, this is awesome.
Man, that's cool. I totally get that. Totally respect that. It's always great when you can, I mean, it's weird for people because it makes you a little bit nervous when you are not the smartest person in the room, but it's the best place to be. As long as you can have a little confidence, knowing that you're there to learn, and it's actually good to be that. You actually don't want to be the smartest person in the room, because then you're teaching or you're not learning, you know, one of the two. Now I have a bit of a hypothetical question for you.
Okay.
Because I may or may not have a time machine in Nashua, New Hampshire. And so let's say you come visit, we get some lobster, get some beers. And so you get to use this time machine. It goes back in time, particular time. You get to meet yourself a little bit after graduating, and you get to meet like that younger version of you straight out of school, doesn't know too much about the world yet. What kind of advice would you give yourself, knowing everything you've been through?
Facetiously, that girl that you're interested in, yes, go talk to her. It worked out well.
Hey, her? Yeah, yeah. You do that even sooner, maybe. Like, don't delay on it. Don't kick around. Go for it. You got this.
I would. Yeah, next month is our 9-year anniversary. I'd love if it was the 10-year anniversary.
Exactly.
That's way more fun to plan. So, dude, hurry up. But a little more, maybe, I guess, seriously, is explore. The way that I landed in a mass comm was I explored different majors. I do have a love of learning, and I think any good marketer does, because it's always changing, right? It's always adapting. There's always these new viewpoints coming up, even what we talked about today. In college, do the same thing. Hey, let me try out this major. Hey, let me try out an intro course to this major. Hey, maybe I love biology. Whoop, that lab just destroyed me. Nope. You know, may or may not have happened. But then you get out of college, it's like, hey, you have a degree in this one thing. Go do that one thing. It's like, no, don't. You know, I have a mass communication degree. So I did video production, a lot of writing, some reporting, stuff around that. Those skills and a lot of the soft skills I developed around that helped me now. You know, I've probably written over a million words in my career. Doesn't mean I'm necessarily writing for a living, though. You know, it might be web content, it might be ad content, it might be, this blog where I did research. But if I had explored more of the skills that were available and I had developed a love of learning earlier in my career, I think I'd be so much stronger than I am today. And I think I would have found a lot of this with marketing earlier, because the first 3 or 4 years of my career, I kind of did this one thing and I tried to specialize and it just did not work. That love of learning was not there. Even though I just spent 4 years in college cultivating a love of learning, I kind of abandoned that. So explore just like you did in college with all of your academics, because that was, I lost that for a while. And I think that hampered me early in my career.
Love that idea of exploring and trying things. You never know where that passion might come from. And you might be one phone call, one meeting, one book away from like that next new favorite passion you never knew existed. So cool. Very cool. Dude, this has been fun. Where can people connect with you? And by the way, for those people tracking on things, and remember, we will have to come back and talk about attribution. In fact, before we get to I had this thought. You mentioned the legacy mindset, right? And we like to poo-poo the people, especially the old execs at some company that like don't even understand social. They're still asking you about MySpace and you're like, these people. But you know what? We can all be guilty of that, especially if you're not practically in it, using it day to day. So I love that you've done this research on this topic and you've brought up some great points. I've learned a bunch today, but I need to make sure I'm not falling into the legacy mindset too. I think how we do that is with good podcasts, but also good content. So I've given you a nickname. You're the great filter, or the great marketing filter. And I would be stoked to hear about your next topic. I don't know if you've thought about it yet, but it could be attribution. We could talk about that. Or I'd love to put a request in for AI because the bullshit is real right now around it. But I'd love to know what actually is the case. So I don't know, but I want to encourage you to do this again. And people have only heard, they haven't even seen this paper you've written. So do you have a next one in mind of what you'd like to do?
There's a few topics that are interesting. What I need to do is kind of sit down and outline it and then start to research it and then really see, oh, what's really piquing my interest. AI actually is one where I'm going because I'm in the, has AI just been overrated for 10 years camp? I kind of feel like it has been, but exploring that further, you know, is it being used in ways I don't know? Because I don't fully understand that space necessarily. Demand gen versus ABM is another one where that's been fleshed out to some degree, but also there's so many nuances because I do both. And I made a lot of mistakes trying to do some ABM because, you know, demand gen is user-based, ABM is account-based. Like, how does that look functionally? And I think if I explore that some more, I'll probably learn and become a better marketer myself. So that is interesting.
You know, real quick, I wrote down ABM as well. I forgot to mention that. Look, I love Sixth Sense. I love Terminus. I love the people at these companies.
They're good companies.
But I'm also really confused and have my suspicions that there's a lot of things that are maybe overrated as well, right? So by calling you the great filter, I would, you know, I've unfollowed everyone else. So it's like, whatever you tell me is the case, I think I will trust moving forward. So, any of these things, definitely do the research. I'll tell you what I think I know. Forms are one thing, but I am really in the clouds when it comes to the ABM side, and I'm very skeptical on the AI side. So, but what I will do is I will make sure I have that student mentality when I listen to your research analysis on these topics.
The question, could I be wrong, is one that I know I struggle to really arrive to.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to reflect in that way or admit that you might be wrong. I don't. Like I said, I'm told I'm wrong all the time now with two kids and cats. So I want to be right sometimes.
Yes.
But asking that question led me to an article that was, I found fascinating, loved writing, got to talk to some really interesting marketers and hear points of view I had never considered before, all by asking the question, what if I have this wrong? I do hope to do it again. Hopefully, if that happens, then I'll touch base.
Yeah, man. And record those interviews and turn that into your own podcast. And you're welcome. So, hey, where can people get in touch with you? Right? Where do you want them to reach out? What social platforms, web addresses? Where can they get some of these cool bundles? This particular bundle or this particular piece of content, where do they get this one at so they can follow up on the forms?
So pedowitzgroup.com is the website where you can go see the bundles. We have plenty of content that's ungated, obviously, because blogs, you know, we're not going to get everything. You want it in PDF format, go for it. So what we've talked about today, you can see it in action. Drift is on our site. We use Sixth Sense. So you want to talk about that or you want to see some of that in action, go to our site. I'm active on LinkedIn. It's the only social platform I have time for. And Student Mindset, a well-curated news feed really, really can be helpful. LinkedIn, CALEBRULE, just come find me, just shoot me a connection request and let's talk shop. I'm not going to sell you something in messages. I love talking shop. I feed off of meeting with other, marketers to be able to do that. Or if you want to email me, Caleb, firstname.lastname@pedowitzgroup.com. So Caleb.Fool@pedowitzgroup.com. I'd be happy to chat. Or if you're looking to sell me something, look at my LinkedIn profile. I will tell you how to get a response from me. It is buried in my description. Guaranteed response from me.
This is great, man. This is absolutely great. I even had a thought. You have a really cool name. I don't know if you've ever thought of like Marketing Rules.
You know, it's hilarious.
Ponder that.
I have not thought of that.
Marketing Rules.
I've heard rule jokes, but that's a new one.
Anyways, this research is great. Whatever I can do to help you out with future ones, connecting you to other ones, other guests of the show, happy to do that. Thank you so much for being on here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, man. I mean, my brain, I've learned, man, bundles is one of my takeaways. I had not thought about that, or the legacy mindset we got to watch out for. So much good stuff. For those listening, if you learned something, and I freaking know you did, because I have literally two pages of notes front and back over here, then share this episode with someone else. That's thought leadership. Get good information into other people's hands. That's how we make this world go around. And with that, Caleb, thanks again, man.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. This has been another exciting episode of the Hardcore Marketing Show. We will see you all next time.